Lanford Wilson, who won a Pulitzer Prize for his 1980 play Tally's Folly, died this week of complications from pneumonia. He was 73 years old. Wilson is one of the playwrights who created the off-off-Broadway scene in the 1960s. His work was so popular, it ended up on Broadway. John Malkovich starred in the Broadway production of Wilson's Burn This, and Wilson's other acclaimed plays include Balm in Gilead, Hotel Baltimore, 5th of July, and Lemon Sky. He also co-founded New York's Circle Repertory Company, which produced plays by Jules Feiffer, Larry Kramer, Sam Shepard, and others. Terry Gross spoke with Lanford Wilson in 1992.
In the late 1960s, you co-founded Circle Repertory Theater in New York. What was the philosophy of the group?
Frankly, we wanted to become the Great American Theater, the Great American Theater Company. But we had done a number of plays. The group, even before we were founded, Marshall and I and Rob Thurkiel and Tanya, we'd done a number of plays that had large casts and ensemble acting that just took forever to rehearse and forever to get right. And in order to create an ensemble, you have to totally trust everyone else on stage with you, because otherwise you're going to make a very large choice and the actor is going to leave you hanging out there. I've seen actors on stage actually look at the audience like, what in the hell was that all about, when someone makes this huge, enormous choice. Well, so the actor, you have to trust that person to be there for you. And if that person is there for you, you can make deeper choices, and that person can make deeper choices, and it just you can just create a much fuller, farther out, more profound experience. And that can only happen in ensemble, or if you happen to know the actor very well, or if you happen to be directed right. And so we wanted to create an ensemble, that kind of an ensemble that would take chances and would not leave the other person hanging out there.
One of your early successes was Hotel Baltimore. And this was about people in a hotel that's condemned.
Yes.
And in your early days in New York, you lived in welfare hotels, right?
Right. I first lived at a place that I never did learn the name of it. I think the hotel did not have a name.
Was it called Hotel?
it should have been. It was right across the street from Manhattan Hotel. And they answered the phone with something incomprehensible. I never did hear what it was. It sounded sort of like Hevro. And so we called it the Hevro Hilton. But it was definitely a welfare hotel. And then I moved from there down to the Broadway Central. And the week I moved out of the Broadway Central, the hotel collapsed.
Wow.
It fell completely into the ground. Fortunately, it did it slowly. It did it over a period of about a day and a half, so everyone got out. But so I had a lot of experience with that kind of hotel.
Did you lay awake often at night overhearing fights that were happening in the halls or another room?
When I slept was the hours that I didn't go to sleep until about 8 in the morning back then. And so I had a nice quiet sleep. I was part of the people that was making the noise so other people couldn't sleep, probably.
What were you doing all night?
Well, I was writing, and the whole neighborhood was it was the middle of Needle Park. It was such an enormous shock to me and so thrilling because the neighborhood was filled with hustlers and pimps and prostitutes and drag queens. I'd never seen anything like it in my life.
Not everybody would find that thrilling.
Well, it was thrilling to me. I thought it was the most colorful place I'd ever seen in my life. Also, there were a bunch of guys from Columbia, so I was learning Spanish,
Not Columbia University.
Didn't learn, not from Columbia University. From Columbia and Costa Rica. And Costa Rica University. So I just found it thrilling. I would walk right up to a pusher and say, how exactly does a drug transition work? And where do you get the dope from? And they'd say, get out of here, kid. Because I just wanted to know how everything worked. I thought it was really exciting. So I was usually downstairs in, this is all Balm and Gilead. I was usually downstairs with the Balm and Gilead crowd in that coffee shop.
Yeah, let me explain that Balm and Gilead is a play that takes place in an all-night diner.
An all-night diner,
and it's a diner that's frequented mostly by drug dealers and pimps and prostitutes and other small-time criminals.
Yeah.
So what attracted you to people like that? You were from the Midwest?
Yeah, from a very proper upbringing in the Midwest, farm yet, grew up on a farm. And I just think it was, I think, you know, it was raw enterprise that attracted me. Everyone was out to make a buck, which is true of everyone everywhere, but it was just so raw and bold and obvious there that when I was writing Baum and Gilead, I always said I could really be writing about Wall Street. It would be exactly the same. And that's why I was looking at the economics of it. Also, they had such a great sense of humor about themselves. There were at least five. There was a drag queen and a drug dealer and a fantastic prostitute who just would sit around dishing the dirt, and it was the funniest dialogue I'd ever heard in my life. I didn't ever get the prostitute into a play until I wrote Hotel Baltimore, and then finally the part that Concetta Ferro played, April Green. Finally, I got that prostitute into it. You couldn't say a word to that woman without a comeback.
So what did all the hustlers and con men and drug dealers bring out in you? What surfaced in you?
Oh, I was their pet. I mean, they knew I was writing down every word they said because I would walk up and say, "Would you repeat that, please?" And they thought I was the cutest thing they'd ever seen. You know, they thought I was really very silly. You know, they kind of protected me. I think they felt very protective. When I finished the play, Baum and Gilead, I gave it to a couple of people I'd written about, like an idiot, to read and check for errors. And they read it and said, "Well, that's more or less what it's like." You know.
Do you think if you weren't so naive, it wouldn't have been that easy?
Oh, I'm sure. If I hadn't been that naive, I would have probably been horrified. But and now I'm a little bit shocked at the society that I moved in back then. I can't quite believe that I was in the place when someone was murdered there. That was really horrifying enough. Someone walked in with a knife and stabbed someone and turned around and walked out. We didn't know the person who was stabbed at all. They were from another neighborhood, and we didn't know the people who stabbed him. It was just very alarming, but it was the sort of thing that could easily have happened there at any time. It just hadn't.
Well, after plays like Baum and Gilead and Hot Old Baltimore, you eventually turned to completely different subject matter, which was a family from the Midwest, the Tally series of
plays. The Tally
series,
right.
It was a family from the Midwest, from Lebanon, Missouri, which I think is where you're originally from.
Yeah, I was born in Lebanon.
Yeah, so this is a family that's not your family, but not probably
not,
unlike...
Not at all my family.
Okay, yeah, but your family must have some connection to them. So how did you turn from this family that was very exotic, very not like you at all, you know, the Baum and Gilead crew,
right,
turn from that to a Midwestern family who absorbed you for five plays?
Yeah, I think they were kind of exotic to me. My connection with that family is my mother cleaned for them.
Oh.
So they were sort of, these were the rich people that lived up on the hill, and they were exotic to me. I had always wanted to write about them. I had spent hours talking to various members of this family and other people like that. So the whole class, I'd go with my mother and she would clean the house, and I would talk to the cook and the lady of the house and the kids that live there. So I always was very strongly attracted to all of those rich kids because we were very poor, and examined them. I mean, you know, I would, on the rare times when I went to their houses, you know, I would ask the mother to take me through the house so I could see the way they lived. It was fascinating to me.
Explain what it was about the Tally family that you created, the family that was originally loosely based on the family that your mother cleaned for. I mean, what absorbed you in that family enough to bring you back about five different times?
I think they were America for me. I think they were changing so much. The war had had a very profound effect on them. the country was changing and they were changing and were not coping particularly well with the change. And that, I think, was the first thing that drew me to them. The whole idea of family is very interesting to me because it's not at all the way the politicians talk about. We have to create a strong family unit and everything is for the family. Well, bull hockey. I mean, families are about the most destructive things that's ever been invented. They're horrible. And there are so few families that work. Half the families and half the people in the country don't have two parents. You could name on one hand anyone in a class of, say, 60 that has one meal with the entire family sitting down together. That doesn't happen anymore. I wonder if it ever did. And also the meals that we had at home were the most horrible experiences of my life.
What kind of food?
Well,
it wasn't the company, as
my stepfather telling us all how to eat, and it was his only chance to torture the family altogether, and so he made the most of it.
Do you have a group of people you think of as being your family, even though it's not a nuclear family?
Yes. The Circle Rep is my family. Yeah. Either Circle Rep or there's another small little adjunct to that. I live in Sag Harbor. And there are few neighbors there that are also I also feel of as very, very important to me.
So what are you going to wear to the opening tonight?
I have to find a shirt. I've got a really nice sport coat, a pair of gray pants that don't quite match. I've got my hard shoes in town. I'm going to wear my hard shoes and a pair of clean socks, got a clean pair of shorts, new T-shirt. And I have to find a shirt. Either that or I have to iron a shirt. I did all of my laundry, and so all of my shirts are very clean, but they're really kind of rumpled. So I have to go out and find a shirt or a sweater or something to wear with that jacket.
Well, I'll let you get to it.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for talking with us.
It's been fun.
Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Lanford Wilson, who died this week at age 73. He spoke with Terry Gross in 1992, just hours before the opening of his play, Redwood Curtain.